Welcome to the Mad Men Happy Hour, the officially unofficial podcast for Mad Men on AMC. I'm Jim.
And I'm Aaron.
This week it's going to be Season 5, Episode 11, titled The Other Woman.
Yes, it will.
As usual, I'm going to ask you the question, what did you think about this episode?
Yes, you are. Best episode of the season, and I realize I'm starting to sound like a wiener whore here.
Right?
Because I've said that three times already this season, but I swear to God.
They just keep getting better and better.
Because not only was this brilliantly written, but it also covered so much mileage character-wise. Like, several things fundamentally change and alter the course of Mad Men characters, and that doesn't happen all the time.
And they all happen due to the buildup throughout the entire season.
Yes.
I mean, especially like the stuff with Pete that I've been really hating Pete for, and his desire to just have everything really comes into play here.
Right.
I just loved it from top to bottom. This is such a good episode.
I think Sepinwall hit something on the head, nail on the head in his review, where he says, how you feel about this episode is going to fundamentally come down to whether you thought the characters in would actually do what they did in real life. Like, if you buy their motivations, if you think there's no way Joan would prostitute herself out, then you probably hated this episode. If you think there's no way that, you know, Pete would have acted it away or Lane or any of those ones, then you didn't buy the episode, or if you didn't buy Peggy's motivation. But
well, Joan's fridge was busted. I mean, come on.
Jesus.
She needs some money, you know?
There will be real talk on this when we get to there, because I've got some. I want to delve in that issue as much as a straight white male guy can do.
You've warned me, and
from
my place
of loaded privilege, I want to discuss the plight of the female and the double standard of prostitution.
All right. Well, loaded privilege is a good place to start in our recap, because a bunch of loaded privilege guys are sitting around brainstorming ideas for Jaguar. Don does not want to use the word mistress, but he wants that idea incorporated into the theme. And Roger buys lobster for the guys.
Jealous. I like Ginsburg's You Love It When You're In It.
You love it when you're in it? That was just some random, we just throwing shit out now?
It's a very sexual context. When you're all up in it.
Yeah.
I think that works on several levels.
Not quite as well as the slogan he came up with later.
No.
But I'm with you. Peggy does not like lobster, apparently. She hates lobster.
No, I didn't get that at all.
No, she loves lobster, and she jealous
wishes
she didn't get any.
Exactly. Yeah.
She wanted to be in that writing room with the guys, figuring it out.
Which is funny. It's like one of those things where her ability is a curse, because Don knows she can run everything without his approval or acknowledgement or anything, and she does. Mm-hmm. But because she's so goddamn good at her job, she is walled off from the one, you know, awesome thing that the firm is all hands on decking.
Yeah, yeah. All right, let's move on. Herb Rennett, I think, is his name. Is that right? His last name?
I know his first name's Herb.
Yeah, his first name's Herb. His last name, I think, is Rennett.
Herb the Perv.
Asked to get to know Joan a little better.
Yeah, in a biblical sense.
Yes, sir. And he says he's kind of shy, which to me is hilarious, because he's not shy about asking for this. Not in any way.
That's a different kind of courage.
Yeah, certainly.
It's easy to look at a guy like Pete and be like, this is a guy that'd be open for a pitch.
And then you look across the table at Ken, definitely not open for that.
No, but Pete, he's like, okay, this is my people.
Yeah,
Pete is my perv people.
He throws it out there, and then you can see Ken's immediate reaction as well. She's not going to go for that.
Yeah,
no, we can't do that.
And he wants to shut it down, nip it in the bud.
He does, and the guy Herb keeps talking about it, but he's glancing at Ken, but he's really focused in on Pete.
Because he says Pete's hot for the deal. This is not a bridge too far.
Hey, there's no bridge too far in Pete's
Ken's world. Trying to pull the bolt out of that bridge and send the whole idea tumbling to its death, but Pete's trying to keep that bridge together.
Definitely. So then Don comes home to Megan, where she's practicing her lines for her audition. He asks her for help with the Jaguar campaign, and she gets offended by his implications that mistresses are more desirable than wives in a lot of ways.
That's the text. I want to talk about the subtext of the scene.
Okay.
He comes in and says, you're good at additions, and she says, not as good as the girls that get the parts. Mm-hmm. And then later on, when you see what goes on in this second edition callback, where they're like just treating her like a piece of meat, and you see the, you know, proverbial casting couch. Mm-hmm. I wonder if these other girls aren't getting the parts, not entirely on their merits. And that's one thing that Megan is refusing to do. And that might be something we see her do in the next.
Yeah. She two definitely episodes. Seemed hesitant to even do a little turn that they asked her to do, which rightly so. I mean,
she's very talented. We know this. She's very beautiful. We know this too. So why isn't she getting the parts? Especially since this theme seems to be, prostitution and putting out to get ahead.
Yeah.
Exactly. I kind of wonder if they're going to bring that around in the next episode or two.
Yeah, well, it's interesting with actresses. I kind of felt there was a meta context here where they're talking about actresses and this idea of the woman you can't have being more desirable. The woman you see on the screen being more desirable than the woman you do have, maybe. I felt like that was an interesting comment on actresses in general, their acting.
Is that a crack about Megan's teeth?
Fuck no.
Okay.
No.
Because that's pretty shallow.
Yes, that would be shallow. So Pete approaches Joan with Herb's request. She is less than thrilled.
Oh, Christ. This was...
To say that.
So what's the most uncomfortable scene in Mad Men history? It was the Zooby Zooby Zoo. And then a couple weeks ago, we came up a new one. What was that one?
I don't know.
Was it Pete trying? I feel like it was involving Pete.
Well, they're always involving Pete.
But now we got this where Pete is propositioning Joan and
thinks he's being smooth about it.
So Lane called him a grimy little pimp.
Oh, yeah, he did. I've got a new nickname for Pete. It's Grimy Little Pete.
Yeah, he is the GLP, man.
GLP.
He's totally a pimp in this situation. There's no other word for it.
No,
he's so horrible at this. He's trying to compare to Cleopatra. Was Cleopatra a prostitute?
Well, I mean...
What will it take to make you a queen? She's like, really? Mm-hmm. Are you trying to Don Draper me? Because you're not a fucking Don Draper.
Well, what was his real goal in this scene? I mean, if his goal was to find out if she's even open to the idea, he did that. She said, you can't afford it. Which means, I'm open to it, but... The number's too high for you.
It's like that classic line where a guy offers a woman $1 million to sleep with him.
Uh-huh.
And she's says, like...
How about $1,000?
Or about he's like, how about a dollar? She's like, what do you take me for? He goes, well, we already know that. We're just now haggling over price.
Exactly, yeah.
But the thing is, do you think that you couldn't afford it? I didn't take that as a, I want to be wowed with a big-ass dollar figure. I think Pete took that to the partners as a way to... Get them hot for it and try to keep, again, his whole time, he's just trying to keep building this bridge. Nothing will derail this
And then
bridge.
Once her fridge broke, that was the straw that broke the camel's back.
That was the thing that solidified the cement in the bridge?
Absolutely. I'm with you there. She wasn't totally...
The thing is Pete's got a... She throws back in his face, well, how would you feel if someone asked Trudy that?
Yeah.
But I can't remember what season, if it was two or three, when Ken originally got into publishing, Pete, in a fit of jealousy, had Trudy take one of her old, I think, boyfriends out for dinner, who was the head of a publishing house, to potentially get him published. And he's basically said, you know, flirt with him. So he has whored his own wife out for a goddamn publishing deal.
Yeah, I don't think that comment struck home as much as she wanted it to.
No.
Yeah, she was like, aha, I'll get you with this one.
Yeah. Yeah,
that kind of slid off of Pete.
It's like
everything
would...
else, his grimy ass.
Oh, God. He really is a piece of work, isn't he?
He is.
And then at the end, the whole smart, well, I hope I have insulted you. That's really all that matters to me.
Jackass.
And Joan perfectly is like, I get it.
Yeah.
So.
Next scene is Peggy thinking quick and saving the Chevalier account. She comes up with the Lady Godiva theme for the pitch, the ad. And it kind of ends with, I guess, the empowerment of Lady Godiva there, the empowerment of women, targeting more towards women than the man going into the bar. And
that women aren't just objects to win and seduce, but they can also, you know, bring the man up to their level. So, just kind of preaching this equality to do to to, I guess, sell the most evil of all holidays, Valentine's Day.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought that was pretty good. And also, I think something has been missing this season in Mad Men is effective ad pitches. Like, I haven't seen a lot to where, like, when I take a step back, I'm like, damn, that's a fucking good ad pitch.
Yeah.
And I feel like there was at least two here, Peggy with the...
Well, we saw a lot of Heinz, but they kept shutting them down.
Well, I thought that, and I actually thought those ideas weren't that great.
They were all right. The one that Megan came up with at the end was obviously much better.
It was better, but it's still not like, you know, Carousel or Jaguar, especially. Jaguar might be one of the best goddamn ad pitches I've ever seen.
It certainly plays for the market.
For the market.
Absolutely.
But I even thought this with Peggy was really good. So it's like, and maybe it's because, as I think Daniel WB puts, like, the goddamn beans. You know, it's like we were focusing on beans so long, there's not a good ad pitch you can make for beans. But, you know, Jaguar and Chevalier Blanc?
I think it's Chevalier.
Chevalier, yeah.
Yeah, Blanc.
Well, I can barely speak English, let alone French. French.
Uh-huh.
Moving on.
Peggy tells the partner, Pete tells the partners about Herb's demands. Don walks out, but the other partners vote to make it happen without his consent. Actually, they don't vote. They just kind of let it sit there. Pete do his thing.
Mm-hmm.
Let Pete be as grimy as he wants to be. I gotta say, the thing that really stuck out to me in this scene, other than Lane's, like, haggling over bonuses again and, like, trying to save money and stuff like that, the end of this scene where he looks at Pete and he just... I felt like he wanted to box him again.
Mm-hmm. Like, well, he's like basically
how,
like,
disgusting of a person are you?
You are a grimy little
pimp. I was 100% right when I called you that before.
The other thing I wanted to notice, I thought this too, but I'm going to give credit to Lisa Louise Langford, who I'm going to start calling Triple L.
Uh-huh.
Or Triple L. Like my favorite Belgian beer.
There you go.
She says, does Roger know that Joan's a hoe? I mean, that's his baby mama, and he's more concerned with money than honor. Mm-hmm. Is the enlightened cosmic Roger really okay with the mother of his child being a being a whore?
He's certainly okay enough with it not to stop it.
Are we comfortable with calling Joan a whore?
She did whore herself out, did she not?
Well,
I mean, it's okay. Presented factually on the screen.
Okay, let's let that ferment a little bit longer.
Okay,
and because the scene where they talk about the 5%, I want to delve a little bit deeper into that.
Okay.
Anyway, continuing. So, what did you think? Again, did we have a consensus about what we thought about Roger in that scene? Does that surprise us? I was kind of surprised. Very mild fucking protest.
No,
from Roger.
Roger is still making his same mistakes. You know. Roger made the mistake last episode.
This is a whole new mistake, man.
Of letting his kid's mother be a whore?
Yeah, like if Mona decided she's going to become a streetwalker, mm-hmm. I don't think that he'd be cool with that. Or if Jane. So why is Joan, like, is that because in his eyes she's always the other woman and that's kind of... I feel like there's maybe we're mining a little depth of Roger's misogyny here.
Maybe so. I also kind of feel like he doesn't have any control over her. Like, even if he went to say, hey, don't do this, it wouldn't have the effect that it would if Don, for instance, went and said that.
And maybe he's thinking, well, shit, she won't take my money. She won't let me claim him as mine. Then what do I care?
Yeah.
At least this way she'll be provided. You know, this is an indirect way of... But he says specifically, I don't want to pay for it.
Yeah, he does.
That's kind of a cheap way of washing your hands of it, though.
Or maybe it's Roger not having much money now. Huh? Mm. There you go.
Yeah.
$50,000 is a lot. All right, let's move on.
Okay.
Don rules out the mistress idea for the Jaguar campaign and throws money in Peggy's face when the team tells him that the new Chevalier ad will be shot in Paris.
That is...
Pretty humiliating, demeaning.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
But he throws money in her face for a reason that isn't actually true. Like, he assumes that she just wants to go to Paris, right?
No,
That's what I got from this.
I think he was just being a giant fucking dick. And that...
Certainly.
You know, just basically... deliberately, I got that he was deliberately getting the point, because obviously they're not going, they didn't film that fucking thing in London. They're not going to film it in Paris. Okay? So, like, I think he's deliberately missing the point just because he's frustrated and he doesn't respect Peggy. I mean, when he really thinks, forced to think about it, whenever the thought of her leaving, like in last season and a few times other when things are broke bad, and he has to really think about it, he does, but he's very casually dismissive and treats her as second class and like she should expect it. Like, hey, it's Jack. I can't put a girl in a car account. What do you want me? Who am I, Superman?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I can't let a...
Yeah, I think he treats all his underlings like that.
And even the men around her are like, so you need to pretend that you're Ginsburg's supervisor. Mm-hmm. I mean, again, the casual misogyny of the era is kind of breathtaking when you see it.
Yeah, certainly. All right, let's move on. Ken tries to cheer up Peggy and gets a reality check for his effort. He goes in there. She says immediately, I'm not crying. Don't want you to think I'm crying. And then at the end, the pact, she mentions again, the pact they had to
your
both leave together.
Stupid pact.
Yeah, she's not about the pact. My question is, now that she's gone, do you think she's going to honor that pact?
I would say no.
No?
I would say that was pretty much her washing her hands of
but
that
But Ken
whole
is
thing.
The only decent guy in this show, man.
Yeah, but
I
man,
don't want to see Peggy do him wrong.
I guess, but there's something like sometimes nice guys can be the biggest dicks of all because he's got this thing like, I'll get you to Paris, and if not, I'll get us both out of here. And she's like, fuck you. I don't need you to save me.
I can do it myself.
Yeah, asshole. I can go out and get a raise and do all this, and you know, I'm a desirable quantity. I don't need you with this pact. And so.
Yeah.
I guess a question for Ken is, does he even want to leave? I mean, they just... SCDP has the appearances of being up, up, up now that they got Jaguar.
That's true. Yeah.
So this might be a kind of kindness on her part. But I also thought it's in character with her independent woman streak.
Well, I get the impression that the underlings at SCDP didn't know the state of SCDP, like the financial state, during any of this.
No, I think
they're just doing their job. They figure.
I think they got stable, but not growing. I think that's been that. I think Pete laid that out for us on the first episode, and so I kind of think that, you know, obviously they haven't gotten bonuses in 2-3 years. I think it's 3 years or 2 years. That's a very. I mean, at my company, I know that's something we look at. Well, the bonuses weren't that great this year. Yeah. Scary.
But the pact was definitely made before the Jaguar thing, so you're right. If Ken's all of a sudden all about the money, which he hasn't really struck me as, you know? I mean, he's doing his writing career, he's doing other things, he's more interested in doing what he wants to do rather than having a bunch of money.
No, I think I think it's more about, yes, for him.
Financial rewards.
Yeah, yep, I'll co-sign that.
All right, so Lane convinces Joan not to take the $50,000 up front, but to demand 5% stake of the company as a partner for his own sake, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he says that he's doing this for the sake of Joan and putting her ahead of the company, but in reality, we know that this is a play that he won't have to go ask for more credit.
Yeah, that's the thing, because yes, he's doing what's best for Joan and the company from his point of view, but his point of view is a little bit fictional because he's operating from a mental space of, we've got this $50,000 extra line of credit that if we tap, it'll cripple the company.
Yeah.
So it does. I feel like it's something that in his mind, he's helping them both out. Like, look, if we give you $50,000 of cash, what's that really going to do? Mm. That's what, 3 years of your income? That's basically $350,000. I don't know. That's a lot of money. It's like, I just did an inflation calculator. It's like $350,000.
Nice.
So, but really,
it's not a lifetime.
You know, that's going to be 5, 6, 7 years.
Teach a Joan to fish.
Right.
Yeah, you give her a fish and she's going to eat for a day.
Right. I don't know. I prefer to think of, you build a man of fire, he stays warm for the night. You set a man on fire, he stays warm for the rest of his life.
Not a fan of
fish. Anyway, what was I saying?
People on fire.
I am a big fan of that.
Okay.
I don't know. I feel like he's trying to, in his way, he is looking out for her and him, just substitute him instead of the company.
Yeah, but I feel like this is definitely him going to Joan at all.
And he knows.
More motivated by his financial trouble than it is for her well-being.
And his, but I do think he's sincere in everything he said as far as, like, look, when I was in your position, I wish I'd done a better deal than I did. Although, shit, what? He's already a named partner. But that, the evidence of he knowing that he was doing a scumbag move was when he left Joan's office and that, like, you know, hand to his temple, like, oh, God, how much further am I going to fall?
Yeah, yeah.
That look is what tells you what you need to know.
Yeah, he's betraying the only partner that he had at the company, ironically by making her a partner.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. And I've got to say, after this scene, I'm like, okay, Don is the only guy who is not grimy in this
scenario.
Well,
I mean, even like I said, so even Lane is prostituting himself because to seal this deal for the money, he's being... You know, stooping to becoming a pimp, something he accused Peeta of, his arch rival. So, not a lot of people avoid this episode, avoid becoming, you know, seen as a prostitute.
Grimy.
Yeah. It's a little grimy. Either pimp or a prostitute in this episode.
Definitely. Also, in this scene, she very pointedly asks that Roger Sterling participated in this conversation, or this discussion. I'm wondering if this is going to come back on Roger, although it's hard to see this coming back on Roger given what Joan did. But I feel like it's going to come up between them, because right now their interactions are kind of limited to the kid, and she kind of put the kibosh on that last week.
Right.
So I think this is kind of the thing that we need to kick their relationship a little bit.
Well, when she says, kind of in a sad, hurt a tone, that I thought this is because... I thought you were telling me to not do this because you had feelings for me. I think that was a blow to Joan, because Joan has been seen as a conquest for much of her life. Very few men, in her opinion, treat her as a, you know, a person or admire her on that level, too. And I think she maybe thought that Lane did that. But now she thinks that Lane... Because that's the thing, like, if there's a girl that you're just, like, fuck buddies with or friends with benefits with, you don't mind seeing them stepping out with other guys because it's like, well, at least she's not coming to me and bitching about her shit. But if you're, like, really care about a woman on that other level, you don't want to see her with other guys. Unless you were talking about polyamory, and that's, like, a whole other brain wiring that I can't get my mind around. So,
well, I got to say...
I feel like Don and Lane, even Roger, like, when he got real with her in, I think, the previous season, he's like, look, I'm going to tell it to you straight. I don't say this to just anybody, but you're the best piece of ass I've ever had. You know?
You thought that was supposed to make me feel good, Roger?
I mean, that's exactly. So, like, even Roger, who his other, like, you know, consistent lover, doesn't view her as anything close to an equal.
It's hard to feel bad for her in this scenario, though, because she has set herself up for this. Her whole goal in SCDP, and she told Peggy this in season one when Peggy came on, was to find a man within the company.
Well, now she's found her own man within the company herself. Now, okay, let's talk about this. Yeah. Let's talk about this.
Okay.
Everyone would prostitute themselves out for the right price, right? Like,
probably.
Like, I'm thinking something distasteful. Like, something like Joan betting Herb level. Like, me having sex with some chic. Some... Okay,
is gay, chic a dude?
Yes, it's a dude. Okay. It's not a it's definitely a dude. I know that there is a dollar figure.
Why is chic?
Well, because I'm thinking, like, okay, some older.
You've got a fat, fantasy, this weird fantasy building up.
He's wearing this white scarf and he's got a bear fetish. He's like, I need this 6'2" buck
American bear fetish
burly dude in my bed. Yes, he's going to tame the American bear. I feel like, and they got the cash with, like, you know, because it's, I'm not going to do it for 50 grand, man. But, like, so.
You're cracking me up.
So there's these guys.
The idea of a chic.
So you got, there's like, so I read this thread on Reddit. It was an Ask Me Anything about a guy who became a male prostitute, even though he was straight. Huh. And he was given up for $200 an hour. Then you got guys that are like, you know, gay for pay, male porn stars who get down on dudes because it pays more. And that's like $2,000 or $3,000 a gig. Aaron would sell himself a little higher than that.
Sure.
But like, would $1 million do it? Would $50 million for sure?
Yeah,
I will fuck any chic you put in front of me for $50 million.
For $50 million.
Damn, that's not too far off the truth. Let's be real now. Because that is freedom and power that really buy. Like, someone hand me that.
Well, you're buying it.
That's permanent. Because then when everyone came up to me and said, well, you took a dude in the ass, I'd be like, well, fuck you, dude. I don't have to ever work again. I can do whatever the hell I want. It's like fuck Pete you
said,
money, right?
Like Pete said, it's one night in your life. We've all made mistakes.
It's one night in my life, and I got $50 million. I got fuck you money for real.
Sure.
So, do you think that's true of everybody? That everyone's got a price. This is like the indecent proposal. There are people out there that wouldn't.
I don't know.
Am I just an amoral asshole?
Does everyone have a price in money? Maybe not. Does everyone have a price in something?
Well, let's
probably so.
Okay, so let's,
because not everyone values money the same way that the majority of society does.
Are you saying that she only did this because of Kevin, her son? Like, if she was a single Joan 5 years ago, would she do this?
I'm saying her fridge was busted, man. She needs the money.
Well, that almost...
No, you're right.
I feel like that was a little slightly heavy-handed. But like I was saying, would Joan do it if she was single? No kid.
Probably not.
Really?
I don't think so. No. No, I don't think so.
Would you do it?
For 5% of SCDP?
Well, I mean, let's do the Sheik situation.
For 50 million of Sheik?
50 million?
Well, he wouldn't be getting a 6'2" bear, that's for sure.
Well, he likes him slightly. This Sheik likes him slightly prettier, Jim.
All right.
Likes a pretty.
50 million's a good number.
Pretty with some dubious Italian heritage.
See, but
that's what he's wanting.
But I value money. I value money. Some people don't, is what I'm saying. Like, maybe some people value...
But see, all I'm saying is, can you call Joan a prostitute? Because she's not exchange... This isn't, like, $200. This isn't, like, sandwich money.
Is she selling sex for something?
But she... Yes. It's for power and freedom. I mean, that's on a whole other level.
That, but she is trading sex for it. And I feel like that is the basis of prostitution.
Let me ask you this.
You cannot have prostitution without sex. You cannot have sex for money or objects without prostitution.
Okay.
That's my feeling on it.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah. Now, was it immoral for her to do that? Maybe not. But it was certainly prostitution.
Okay. Let me ask you this. Do you think prostitution should be legal?
Yes.
All right, me too. That's a whole other discussion, probably.
Oh, we're going to get some emails.
The other thing is, let me ask you something else that might warp your noodle.
Oh, boy.
Which of the partners, setting aside Don, who abstained, which of the partners treated Joan with most respect?
Cooper, because he didn't even talk to her.
I'm going to argue Pete.
No, fuck you.
Dude, Pete was straightforward and honest in the whole time.
He wasn't, though. He was grimy. He walked in, he wanted to see if she was even open to it.
That's because Pete is grimy, but he was never less than completely forthcoming and kind of respected her limits when she says 5%. He started opening his mouth. She's like, that's not a negotiation. Shut him down.
But what Joan wanted was people not to even know he asked. So Cooper, in my mind, not talking to her, not mentioning a goddamn thing, did the thing that she wanted the most.
That's the thing. When he went back to the partners behind her back, you're right. You're right. You've convinced me now.
So Cooper didn't say a goddamn word. And I feel like he's the...
Okay.
Even though he voted, we ruled out Don, because Don obviously was the most respectful here. But Cooper...
There's a couple of theories about maybe Don... knew the timing and that he was... But I don't buy it because of Don's reaction when he found out.
Yeah, yeah. We'll get to that.
Like, if you have that theory, it's like you have to... There's a lot of people that cherry-pick evidence and come up with theories. Mm-hmm. You have to have something that fits all the facts.
Yeah, certainly, yeah.
Unless this is Jim's coffee theory, and then it can just be whatever the hell you want it to be. But...
Yeah.
And I understand you might be debuting a new coffee theory.
Maybe.
Don't chicken it. Don't puss out, man.
I might. We'll get to that, though. So there's a really short shot after that of Trudy watching Pete reading to their daughter, their hideous troll of a daughter. This girl is weird looking, man.
The problem is Pete reading to his daughter on his lap just makes me want to go take a fucking chlorine shower.
Especially after he's just prostituted this girl out. Yeah.
Yes. Ugh. He should be wearing oven mitts handling this child.
What's he going to do with his daughter when she gets older? Is he going to prostitute her?
Yeah. Ugh. He's the kind, like, there's this liquor store chain in Florida. I shit you not. This guy puts his, and I don't know, this is 10 years ago. I haven't been back, but this is Cash's Liquor. And he put his preteen up to, like, from the time she was 12 to the time she was, like, 16 on billboards and, was suggestive pictures and stuff like, you know, come to my daddy's liquor store.
Messed up.
It's, I'm sweet 16, I need a birthday party. It's like, that was their advertising. It's like, so is your client based exclusively pedophiles?
Oh, yeah, completely.
Pete Campbell, I think, founded, left SCDP to found Cash's Liquor. He moved to Florida, and that is, so. I saw the troll baby grew up to be a fetching young lady.
Yeah, this is a true story.
Marketing to pedophiles in Florida.
Definitely.
I don't know what's happening in this podcast. Either. Can we move on?
After that shot, Megan and her friend stop by the office before her audition, and she and Don have a confidence quickie while her friend entertains creative.
By the way, Jaguar, it's your problem, not mine.
Yeah.
Not a bad line. She meant it to be the one way, but if you take it like, you know,
I got an awesome car.
Right.
You don't, it's your problem,
so
not
it's
mine.
So it's unreliable. So it's like, guess what? It's in my garage.
Uh-huh. Definitely.
But she just came in for a confidence bang, right?
Yeah. Yeah. As far as I could tell.
All right.
And her friend got freaky on the table.
Speaking of prostituting.
Yeah.
She's basically letting it all hang out.
She had her clothes off immediately.
So what was the point of that?
Well, I think it was partially to show what kind of people are running against Megan here in these auditions.
Ah.
I mean, you've got people, because Zooby Zooby Zoo, despite its sexuality, was not nearly as, I want to say, perverse as
it
what
was,
this girl was doing.
To borrow Don's phrase, it was a wink, not a leer.
Exactly. It was much more classy than a girl crawling around on a table
making animal
to be a
noises.
Cat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think she was trying to get like, hey, you should do the commercial like this.
Yeah. She was trying to get hired.
Right.
She was looking for a job.
Right.
And she was prostituting herself out in that way. And
do you think she would sleep with one of those dudes to get that part?
Oh, hell yes.
Okay. That's what
that
I was wondering.
Would. Yeah.
And Ginsburg is completely immune, which I loved.
Yeah.
Because I kind of felt, because I've some.
Yeah, he looks back. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, I get it. I get what's happening here. But, and then he's like focused on work. And that was the light bulb he needed for the later pitch, obviously.
Yeah, yeah. So Pete then tells his wife that he wants an apartment in the city when they close Jaguar. And she is less than happy about it. She says that he's had a love affair with Manhattan. Little does she know.
They basically start singing the Green Acres theme song.
What is that theme song?
You don't know that?
No.
Green Acres is the place to be. Farm living is the life for me. Land
gotcha.
Stretch out
so
the farm.
Raise...
Keep Manhattan, just keep from this countryside. And she's like, no, New York is where I'd rather be. I can sing the whole thing for if you'd like.
No, please
for
don't.
For $50 million, I'll do it right now, Jim.
I bet you would.
How about $5?
You're a grimy little pimp.
Anyway, yeah, so she's like, I hate Manhattan. I love Manhattan. There's no... He's like, there's no good bedtime noises.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pete, do you know, I'm a country boy. Do you know what a good bedtime noise sounds like? It sounds like
as much as Indianapolis can deliver a good bedtime noise. Sure.
No, it sounds like this. That's a perfect bedtime noise right there.
Yeah, yeah. You're a country boy. You like that stuff.
I like
man.
A dead. I but like a dead quiet, like a dead dark.
I get used to the noise.
Yeah,
I'm more in Pete's camp here. Surprisingly,
right.
I hate to say it.
I was going to say that says a lot about you there, Jim.
Yeah. So they talk about that, and then
he puts all of his energy in putting his foot down.
Exactly. What the hell, Pete? Come
yeah,
on.
His pimp foot.
Yeah,
which Trudy casually.
His pimp foot is strong.
She casually overturns it with her little finger.
Yep. So Joan gets home, and her fridge is broken, and her mother's waiting for her. Her horrible, horrible bitch of a mother.
Did they just imply that her mother has been boning Apollo? I think they did.
They certainly imply that everyone thinks that. I don't know if that's true or not.
Yeah.
But Apollo seemed a little out of her league, honestly. As far
I don't
as
know.
Looks department.
I don't know.
This lady's what, 60-something?
She did spawn Joan. No, she's not 60-something.
No,
Joan's like 30s.
50.
Yeah, late 40s, early 50s.
Yeah.
Her, she is awful. Maybe. I'll grant you that. The whole,
she's a horrible bitch.
He's a baby. He doesn't know we all want his father dead.
Yeah.
No wonder Joan makes poor decisions.
No wonder Joan's kid is going to grow up to be a prostitute.
It is poignant, though, when you think of last week, her discussion with Don, where he's like, my mother raised me to be admired.
Mm-hmm.
This is the mother that raised her. And also, Don, I think, took that like tonic. And now, do you think Don admires Joan after what she's done?
A little bit. They certainly have a connection.
I can't tell if Don is more upset with the idea that Joan prostituted herself, which I think he is genuinely upset.
Yeah, he is.
But was he more upset with that or the fact that he now will never know whether his pitch, his delivery of Ginsburg's idea won the day or, you know, Joan's man trap, if that won the day.
Gotcha, yeah. I don't know. But I did notice that her mom, the horrible alcoholic that she is, immediately asks, have you been drinking?
Oh, you have?
Well, that's a cause for me to drink,
too. Let me catch up.
Yeah. She grabs two glasses. Ridiculous.
Of course. It'd be not social to not drink in that situation. You can't be unsocial.
Yeah.
That's what I meant to say, unsocial.
All right. Megan tells Don that she got a call back for the second audition and mentions that she'll be going to Boston if she gets the job. Don tells her that she can't go, and Megan accuses him of not believing in her. I think Megan's spot on here. He never considered it because he didn't think it would happen.
I didn't think he thought it through, and it's funny that Don tries to put his pimp foot down, and Megan blows through that. Yeah. And he's like, just do whatever the hell you want, which is going to set up beautifully the whole no control, not being able to own something that Ginsburg's going to tap in.
Yep. Yeah, the real theme of this episode. So Joan tells Pete that she wants a 5% stake and a partnership. And I thought this was amazing, considering that is all Pete has ever wanted, is a partnership in this company. And now Joan gets it and tells him about it. This is what I want, and there's no negotiation. Way to rub it in his face. Way to rub it in. I liked it.
Yeah.
Ginsburg delivers a pitch.
But that, the whole idea is like, you know, when he tries to make himself feel better, he's like, you know, this guy's not that bad. And she comes back with the, well, he's doing this.
Yeah, yeah. He is certainly bad. Ginsburg then delivers a pitch that Don can't refuse. And this is the pitch. You can own it, truly own. Yeah.
Did you pitch that when Ginsburg's going on about, you know, this asshole, he's probably got lots of things he takes for granted. Do you get the fact that he's talking about Don here?
Well, I certainly got that this connected to Don because this is Don.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like...
I think Ginsburg realized that while he was talking, but...
I think he did because he got the inspiration while watching him cavort with his wife, and then he's drawing like the fact that you know, think about all the things that Don yanked his idea, ganked his idea.
Yeah.
Don goes takes breaks that he's not allowed to take. He screws beautiful woman on the clock when they come and go where they please. I'm totally when he says, you know, this asshole, I'm 100% positive he knows he's talking about Don.
Now, is Don aware of that?
No.
And does Don think this is a dig?
Which I think Ginsburg probably thinks is very funny.
Yeah, he probably does.
Ginsburg is a very clever guy. That's my read on it. And he's probably talking about Pete, too, but he's mostly talking about Don in my...
Well, Pete is kind of the obvious buildup to this episode, right? He has wanted everything.
But then Pete doesn't own very many beautiful things, either. Except
certainly
for
not a daughter.
Oh, Jesus Christ, man. It's an 18-month-old. What do you want?
I know. I'm picking on the girl. Sorry. All right. Let's move on. Peggy has lunch with Freddie.
Did we actually talk about the tag, the last something beautiful you can truly own? I just want to make sure we actually said that.
What do we want to say about it?
Did we just say it? Did we verbalize it? Okay.
Oh, we were going to get to it, I think, at the pitch at the end.
Because there's some people that actually listen to our cast and they don't watch the show.
That shocks me.
It shocks me, but I feel like now that I know that...
Because we do a terrible job of going step by step through it.
But I feel like now that I know that, it's like, if you didn't know that, you'd be like, what the fuck is the pitch? What the fuck is the pitch?
Yeah, true. So,
but it's people that don't have cable, they're in Europe, and there's no...
the Europeans, huh?
I hear it's damn hard to watch AMC in step with America if you're... Because there's no like legal way to do it.
Legal.
That's what I'm saying.
You're letting it legal.
You're letting internet laws. There are no laws on the internet.
Yeah, come on.
Prostitution is legal. Mad Max drives free.
Peggy goes to lunch with Freddie, who we haven't seen in a long time, right?
A long time.
He convinces her to make the move to another company. She seemed a little reluctant until he pointed out the fact that if this were not an emotional thing for you, if this were purely business, this is what you would do.
And by the way, that's what Don would do.
Absolutely. Yeah, and she brings that up later.
I do believe she has a WWDDD bracelet on at all times.
What would Don do?
Yeah, what would Don Draper do?
Gotcha.
And it's interesting that she met with him because Freddie is the one that first discovered her back in season one. He was working on a lipstick campaign. He noticed her kind of like chops for writing copy and brought her to Don's attention.
Yeah.
So now he discovered her and now he's rescuing her, I guess, from Sterling Cooper Draper Price.
Yep.
Anything else on that scene? Because I got an interesting piece of reader feedback on it.
Oh, go for it.
He said, I couldn't help but notice that Freddie called Peggy ballerina. Apparently, Elizabeth Moss studied ballet for years with the great American ballerina named, wait for it, Suzanne Farrell. He says, I have an autographed pair of her toe shoes on my wall, but that's another story. Susan Farrell, or Farrell, was the name of Sally's teacher in season three who Don had an affair with.
Gotcha.
It's nice to see a reference of this as part of Moss's past and a tacit acknowledgement of the source of the name of Don's school teacher's former mistress, who was played by Abigail Spencer. An odd homage or homage, but whatever. I did not catch that, and I thought that was great.
Yeah, I like in really good shows, they always seem to bleed real life into their fiction.
Mm-hmm.
They take the things that are happening in the real actors' lives,
yep,
and they build some themes around that.
Right.
I like it. So Pete tells Don that Joan agreed to spend the night with Herb in exchange for a partnership, and Don rushes over to Joan's house to stop her.
I love how Pete tries to maintain control of the situation just with denial. Mm-hmm. Don's like, where's Joan? Like, she's already left. There's nothing you can do to stop it. And Don's like, get my things. And Pete's like, oh, yes, you should get your good night's rest. And Don's like, fuck you. I'm going over to Joan's house, dick.
To stop this shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, and powerful scene when he gets there.
Yeah.
Very powerful scene, made even more poignant
the way they structured
throughout
it.
The episode. Yeah, as the episode unfolds.
So the point of that is, you know, if this is what it takes to get it, it's not worth it. We shouldn't do business with people like that. Mm-hmm. And I like how she doesn't say that she's not going to do it. And I notice this the first time through. She says, I understand. I'm all right. And thank you.
Yeah.
So basically saying, I get what you're saying.
I understand what I'm doing and the implications.
But I also understand what I'm doing, yeah, and I'm going to be fine. But also thank you for being a decent guy and probably the only one that so far cared about me on a personal level.
Yeah.
Other than
yeah.
what I can do for the business.
And let's also understand all of Don's motivations here. They're certainly caring for Joan and her well-being.
Mm-hmm.
Much like Lane, he also has another issue that's bleeding into this is his mother was a prostitute.
His mother's a prostitute.
Yeah, he doesn't want to see that continue. He doesn't want to see that happen to Joan.
Speaking of double standards, I thought it was interesting. A lot of listeners chimed in with this, but remember back when Sal turned down the Lucky Strikes guy, Junior?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Don's reaction is, why didn't you sleep with him?
Mm-hmm. So he's not and as, he wasn't as righteous any, as he
He wasn't getting say. Shit out of that.
Yeah.
So between the fact that his mother's a prostitute and Joan, and apparently he's more sympathetic for women than gay men, mm-hmm. I just thought that was interesting that in this identical situation, he basically encouraged the other guy or was even critical of, why didn't you do this to save the company?
Yeah.
So, I mean, Don is in a lot darker place then, too.
Sure, yeah.
But, you know, season three was pretty bad in Draperville.
Definitely. And then the final line there where he tells Joan, don't do this. I mean, that's mm-hmm. or I guess it wasn't the final line, but it's a very powerful line there.
Mm-hmm.
Really struck home. Don pitches Jaguar, intercut with Joan and Herb's night in. I got to go with my theory here.
Okay.
Because this guy shows up to the door. Well, first of all, let's say I thought it was awesome when the guys walk into Jaguar. I mean, as disgusting as all of these dudes are, seeing them walk in their suits with briefcases past another group of guys who just did a pitch, it was fucking awesome walking through that lobby.
Also, I thought the guys showroom. Walking away were, I mean, SCDP seemed old school. Like, the guy's walking, and, like, one of them was wearing, like, some crazy-ass sweater.
Like plaid,
and
like, hairy it
wasn't,
style
Yeah,
stuff.
It wasn't all establishment gray.
Gotcha.
Whereas Draper and company walk in, they're, like, total Rat Pack.
I feel like the only one
like, they're going to pull an Ocean's 11 heist on this company.
Yeah. The only guy who doesn't follow that trend, I think, is Cooper, right? He's the only guy. He wears tan suits.
They keep
he wears...
him, and they keep him under wraps. He doesn't wear shoes.
Yeah, he doesn't wear shoes at all. Yeah, but I thought that was awesome. My theory, though, there is no theory around this. It's just something I noticed, is that this guy shows up to the door with Joan wearing a necklace. And we see a necklace on Joan prominently featured throughout the episode. And it's one that she's worn a lot throughout the history of the show. It's that pin necklace,
mm-hmm.
That kind of long, skinny one that I think turns into a pin.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, she gets the emerald necklace from this guy in that scene.
And he's wearing a necklace?
I don't know the significance, and I couldn't tell what necklace the guy was wearing, because we have low-def,
shitty
necklace.
He's wearing a gold douche necklace that gets buried in his chest hair.
He is, yeah.
That's a standard-issue douche necklace.
Standard
I think Pete's got one, honestly.
He probably does. He just hides it under his tie.
Right, yeah, you never see it. He's lacking in chest hair, too.
I don't know what it means, but come on, there's too many necklaces in this for it to be a coincidence. Too many necklaces, man.
All right, we'll see what the listeners make of it, because I'm not on board the bandwagon yet.
Okay. I don't know. What do you think about his pitch here?
Well, I want to point out his line about, I feel like the Sultan of Arabian with Helena Troy in my tent.
Yeah.
And that's going to be interesting, because we had a phenomenal piece of listener feedback about that. And also just like how it really underscores how disgusting the scene is, because you can hear this guy like breathing heavy, like as she's turning around and you know, he tries to put her paws on her and she's like, no, let's keep it classy. Let me do this.
Yeah. She's certainly doing him a favor. We'll say that.
And then it's just devastating. The voiceover Don's providing, like as she's doing the walk of shame out of there, he's like, what price would we pay? What behavior would we forgive?
Yeah. And then you see grimy little Pete smiling over in the corner,
and
this is a commentary on everyone in this show. This is not just a commentary on Joan. Certainly, to a large degree, is focused on her this point.
Yeah, and they dissolve into the flashback of Don meeting with Joan with Herb, and he's really digging this. Like, this is just reaching his little black heart. Like, oh,
barely contain
and
himself, like, restrain himself, whatever.
Yeah, it is. I mean, that's that whole. I mean, I guess if we're going to get really real, that whole concept of, like, ownership of women is something that's really primal, like, black magic. You know, talking about sex sells. I mean, I feel like that's, like, a lot of men's core fantasies.
Well, and that's exactly what
possess
it is.
Possess a woman.
It's the fantasy.
You know. Right.
Because you build this woman that you can't have up in your head to be something greater than maybe the woman you do have. And then she's just a woman. She's just the same as a lot of other women, but you've built up this fantasy.
Putting women on pedestals is extremely destructive behavior.
Certainly, yeah. And we see that Don is doing that. Like, this to me is a commentary on Don as much as it is Joan here, because he thinks he's caught his woman, his fantasy girl, Megan.
Sure.
But I think there are big cracks in that, and we're seeing his wanting to truly own her to be a problem in their relationship and something that the fantasy can't last.
And I forgot to mention that. So that's one of the reasons that the ad hits home, because assholes like Don, all they want to do is possess the woman.
Definitely. So very, very poignant stuff there with those characters.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Slick advertising campaign, though.
Yep.
With the target market. Yeah,
and the best, one of the best Don pitches we've seen in years.
He's confident. He's on his game.
He knows the idea is gold and
his
pitch is perfect. Yeah.
Because he hasn't been on his game for a while now.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's just the style of pitches that they were going with that kind of threw him off of his game. And now that he's back kind of in his element.
Right.
With womanizing, you know.
But he's pitching right there. He's kind of pitching one of his dreams to.
Yeah.
A group of men who are totally going to be receptive to it.
Yeah, share the same dream.
Yeah, so it's a little low-hanging fruit. It'll be interesting to see if he can build on this, especially given his misgivings about the way he won this.
Yeah. And speaking of the actress, the fantasy, I guess, Megan goes in for a second audition in the
next
scene.
Did we talk about the second? We skipped over to the flashback with Joan.
Did we?
Yeah, it happens in between, right after.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, I don't. There's not much to say. It's the same thing. I just want to say that I thought creatively it was a very brave choice to let this. I almost felt like it went on a beat or two too long.
I felt like it went on exactly long.
That's what
enough.
I'm saying, right? Like, I think that there was probably a lot of pressure to, like, you know, they get it. But they needed to have it hold on for an extra few beats before it dissolved.
I didn't get it the first time around.
Really?
Like, I saw it, and then it wasn't until after the episode when I was thinking about it that I went, oh,
how much
okay.
were you drinking?
Nothing.
Oh, well, then I don't know what to say.
Absolutely nothing. Just a brain malfunction, I guess.
And then we dissolve from there into the...
But wait. There's more here, because the scene, it's brutal that we see...
Yes.
That Dawn has come to her and said it's not worth it after she's already done it.
Would it made a difference?
Maybe not, but it really just rubs that idea of you don't have to do this in her face. She's already done it. It's too late to take it back. And even if Dawn's words had some...
Well, like she said, I was under the implying
her,
that
she couldn't do it.
The, all the partners were for this. So yeah, it she kind of implied Dawn that did. Maybe... I don't think there's enough evidence one way or another. I personally believe she would have done it anyway.
Yeah.
But there is at least a hint of maybe she wouldn't if Dawn had gotten there in time.
Yeah. Well, there's certainly the idea that she didn't know that Dawn felt like that.
Right.
She thought Dawn was on board with it.
Right. Which I think shocked her.
Yeah. And it comes into play later when they get the call that they've been hired.
Mm-hmm.
And Dawn finds out that she's a partner. But we'll get to that. So, Megan goes in for a second audition.
Before that, though, they did do the last instance of the Draper walk.
Oh.
It's shot okay. exactly the same as the others, but yeah. there's no Megan. Instead, it's a retinue of, you know, the douches. It's and Matt and Don, first time we see without Megan, him looking happy and triumphant. So, that's all I want to say. Moving on.
Megan goes in for the second audition for the third time.
putting on a display. A little bit of a display.
Yeah. They have her step forward, do a little spin.
She's very uncomfortable with the situation, looks like.
Yeah. Yeah.
But also fades to black before, as it's getting creepy. So, I wonder how
creepy,
you know,
it got.
It'd be interesting to see.
She seems pretty bummed with how it went.
Yes.
So, maybe there was something there that she wouldn't do.
Right.
That... She knew she didn't get the part.
Right.
So Peggy meets with Freddie's friend, who is this
I think it's Shaw.
I don't know how to say this guy's name. It's spelled weird.
It's Chicago. I think that was the joke last season.
Yeah, they say it in the episode,
it's
but
Shaw.
I didn't pick it up.
They pronounce it Shaw. When they say the full name of the
company, yeah.
The company, Cutler, Gleason, and Shaw, that's what they pronounced it.
But he's from that agency, obviously, and Peggy commits to taking the job.
Mm-hmm. Which, again, that's his arch rival that they established last season. He's the one that they...
That's why he's like...
He fucked over on Honda with the epic move.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome scene.
Was that the sword and the chrysanthemum?
It was, yeah. Yeah. So, what do you think here? She slides 18,000 across the table, the guy writes 19. How much do you think she was making before?
I have no idea.
Because we know that Joan is making 12.5.
How do we know that?
Because she says it's 50,000 is four times what I make a year.
I have no idea what she was making before. Just FYI, that is about $135,000 in today's money. $19,000 a year.
Not bad.
Not bad at all.
Especially for a woman in the 60s. I would imagine that's a pretty good salary.
Right. What did you make of his transparent eyeball talk? Honestly, that's a poem from Emerson, right? Written in the 1860s, and I read it, and there's a lot of commentary on it, but a little bit over my head.
Honestly, I've not read it ever,
okay,
so I don't know what it says.
No, it's about how
I was Peggy in the situation.
I thought Shaw laid it out. It's like, yeah, you have to see
pass
it all,
the world
but
you
but be it all too. You have to let all this infinite perspective come through you. Mm-hmm. Now, what do you think? I thought this was a pretty hard ad pitch to her, that he was telling her what she wanted to hear, but with enough truth that it was going to slip past her bullshit barriers. Or do you think he's just being totally honest? I thought this was another this is a seduction scene. One of several.
A little bit, yeah.
Or a pimp scene.
This guy, he's an ad guy. Mm-hmm. So we know that he's going to certainly try to sell whatever he wants to sell you.
Mm-hmm.
So he does that in this scene, but I also felt that he genuinely respected Peggy's work. I mean, he said he looked through her portfolio, and that's where the Emerson stuff came up. I did not feel like it was all bullshit.
No.
He wouldn't hire this girl if it was.
But how much of this was to hurt Dawn and to get some inside information about the agency and how much of it is...
I have a feeling we'll see that. Because I don't think Peggy is done.
Well, the other thing is, if she thinks that this firm is going to treat her any different... I suspect, maybe I'll be wrong, but I suspect that there's not going to be a lot of difference. There's going to be some disillusionment.
Mm-hmm. And maybe she'll get treated worse. I feel like Don's relationship with her gave her an advantage. Like, Don did respect her as an ad person.
It was an abusive relationship, but he did have this weird respect for her when the chips were down.
Because she worked her ass off, and she did good work.
Yep.
And she's losing that by going to another company. She's making $1,000 more, but she's losing that mutual respect.
And at the end of the day, Don saw her, even though, you know, she was his underling, and I think he saw her as not only an equal, but as him.
Yeah, yeah.
So we'll see how it goes over at CDC. Or CGC.
I'm very interested in where Peggy's story is taking her now.
Mm-hmm.
Don gets home, and Megan is there. They talk about what happened with their respective meetings and Don's assumptions about her acting career from the previous scene. I don't know. This scene didn't do much for me, mostly because of the thing where Megan says, "I would choose you, but I would hate you for it." What the hell is the point of choosing someone if you're going to hate them then for it?
Like, well, I think that's another way of saying, like... I've done this in relationships. Like, look, I know what you want me to do, and I'm capable of doing that, but I will tell you what the game plan is. This will work for about 18 months to 24 months, and you'll think I'm the perfect boyfriend slash husband or whatever.
So she's
saying
it is
gonna
ruin it.
I'm going to be a resentful rage monster, and then you have that to deal with. So how about you just decide whether you really... you really love me and what I'm doing and my flaws and imperfections as well as my strong points.
Yeah,
and we cut all that other bullshit out. Or, you know, you let me know if it's a deal breaker. It's just, I thought it was a kind of a crass way to be an honest, to start an honest conversation about it. It wasn't a threat. Yeah. It was just like, this is how it's going to be.
Yeah, no, certainly I got that. But I don't see why you would then go ahead with that option if you know how it's going
to
end.
Well, I think, but that's the thing. I mean, Don has to be honest back and be like, well, you know what? Having an actress wife who's going to be gone 3 months of the year is a deal breaker for me. And it's not going to work. And we need to talk about that. So... I don't know whether that's the thing, will Don do that, or he just roll over and do the reverse, where he's going to accept something that he'll later be resentful for.
We'll see. We'll see. I don't know. Don seems to do his own thing, regardless of what else is going on.
Well, that's the problem. He'll take the third way, which is to do whatever the hell he wants to do, and we know how that goes.
So, SCDP, the next morning, gets a call from Jaguar. Mm-hmm. They've been hired.
Yep.
Congratulations. Everybody celebrates while Peggy tells Don that she's taking another job. Really, really good scene here.
And I thought that Rogers talking about, we'll come by to kiss the bride, was an interesting thematic choice when we've been talking about mistresses and other women and prostitution. And now we're talking about putting on the white lace and...
Yeah, and Megan's commentary
very virginal.
On the wife there at the beginning, being the wife.
Yep.
Lane
just can't stop harping about them fucking bonuses, can he?
Yeah, man, he really wants that money. He really wants that money. I just don't know why Lane can't scale his life back. I mean, he says to Joe, I took less than I needed, but how much do you really need?
Well, I mean, the thing is...
It's all pretense, right?
If the British government has his hands in his pocket, and he's trying to keep those for pride purposes from the other partners, and B, his wife and child, then that's why. That's why he can't scale.
Swallow your pride, man. Would you rather go to jail for tax evasion?
A lot of guys would. A lot of guys do.
It's a bad idea.
I'm not saying it's not. So
the thing that I really like about this scene is... Don realizes in this meeting that Joan is now a partner, right?
And why she's a partner.
And why she's a partner. Now, Don thinks that he got to Joan in time to tell her not to do this.
Until that scene.
So he thinks... No, no, no. Still, now.
Oh,
so now
he
thinks that despite his warning,
she went ahead and did it anyway.
That, to me, is just a brilliant play in this episode.
So he's upset for that reason, and he's also upset because...
But what is this going to do to the relationship in the future? That's my big question here, because She thought he was in on it. Now she doesn't. But he still thinks that she went ahead and did it without, like, after he said everything.
Yeah,
he
that's
said.
True. That's a good point. I don't know. Because
so is
the other thing
lose
is
some respect for her.
We went instantly from one of his finest moments to one of his now. He's probably going to be worse than he was before because this was a giant confidence boost that he's able. It wasn't his idea, but he pitched the shit out of it.
Yeah.
But now he's always going to think, like, did I really win this on my merits?
Yeah. Now Jones.
Did I do this under my whole steam? Was that pitch just a mere formality? And he went from just being elated and happy, and as soon as she came in the room and he realized it, to being to where he didn't even want to celebrate with anybody. Which Peggy misinterpreted.
Yeah.
What's so funny is, like, I feel like Don could have saved this situation, but he was in a dark place, and she misinterpreted as this is just you not being able to be happy with anything or realize when anything's good. You know, talking about his wife and his family situation, and now this work thing is like you can't recognize this. Whereas he knew something that she didn't know. And it just kept on, like, he thought she was negotiating for a job. I feel like there's several times where he could have saved this, but
maybe
the miscommunication got away from it.
I thought Peggy was pretty resolute in her decision. She was leaving, regardless of what Don did there.
Well, but in my opinion. Don did, regardless, we can agree that he did the exact worst thing at every, like, you know.
He's like, yeah, play this out, come on.
And also, it's like, you can't be a Jack, because you're on a girl. It's not about that. It's about Joan being a partner.
Yeah.
Oh, Joan's a partner, big gulp of alcohol. And then when, you know, trying to treat her like she's like a used car salesman trying to wheedle for a better deal. Mm-hmm. And then at the very end when it's too late, what'd you think about that kiss on the hand?
That, I feel like this is a moment in Mad Men that's going to be talked about for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
The moment that Peggy left, because I think a lot of people are going to jump to the conclusion that there is some romantic thing between Don and Peggy. But I, after being slapped down with that opinion several episodes back by one of our listeners, I do not think that you can read that into this.
So, okay, here's the thing. I'll stand by my guns and think that there was a attraction.
All right.
I think this scene is where it died. I think this scene is where she outgrew him and he realized what he left and, you know, the way that it was portrayed. And I read the AMC had a bunch of stuff on the behind the scenes on this, a little video and a story.
Okay.
But Elizabeth Moss said that they told John Hamm to hold my hand and not let it go, but they did not tell her that. So the way Don portrayed it, the way she said is that those were actually real tears because that gesture was actually really, she's getting caught up in the moment.
Nice.
It was really moving her. And it did look, I mean, God damn, that was such a great scene.
Oh, powerful. Powerful scene.
Yeah, you're right. That's one of that's going to be one of the iconic
Mad
Men moments.
That and the lawnmower scene. Somebody loses a foot, come on.
And Roger's LSD trip.
Yeah, there you go. So Peggy gathers her things and walks out amid the celebration.
Mm-hmm.
We were talking about this while we were watching the episode. We both thought when she walks up to that elevator that she was just going to drop 30 stories.
Because she was looking to the side, shaft. Not paying attention. It would just be like someone to just walk forward and then, that would have been awesome, right?
Kind of, but I'm glad it didn't happen. Honestly, because I like it. I like Peggy as a character, and I feel like that would have been too obvious.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah, it would have felt very kind of soapy.
Yeah.
By the way, John Hamm, the veins in his forehead. I talked about him grimacing, but no one can pop a vein, multiple veins.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it looked like a map of the Mississippi River Delta across his forehead. Angry.
What happens when you have 4% body fat?
Not only that, but like 300 over 400 blood pressure.
Yeah. Smoking cigarettes and drinking all day.
That's what he does. He smokes cigarettes, drinks, and chews Viagra all day long.
Probably. How else can he keep up with Megan? Come on. That's it. That's the end of the episode.
Whew.
Phenomenal. Phenomenal episode. We get the credit song, You Really Got Me, the Van Halen version, not the Kinks version. They wrote it, so Van Halen performed it there.
What the fuck are you talking about? Van Halen? That was not the Van Halen version.
Fuck yeah, it was.
Was Van Halen a band in 1966?
Yeah.
Are you shitting me?
No, I have no idea.
Okay.
I have no idea.
I don't think you're right about that.
It's probably the Kinks version.
Or even maybe earlier than that.
No, the Kinks wrote it, man.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think anybody could perform it before they wrote
it. I'm not going to argue with your research. I assume you researched it. This wasn't just like 30 seconds on iTunes.
No, this was all brain stuff happening.
All right. Wow, I'm impressed.
But it's ironic because I swear I've heard this song in a ton of car commercials, right?
Well, yeah. Lots of things.
So they're pitching a car commercial with this song. I don't know. It's funny. I do have two questions for you, or one question for you, actually.
Sure.
Without spoiling anything from Breaking Bad, I want to ask you
I'll spoil the shit out of it.
Who is more disgusting in your eyes, Grimy Little Pete or Walter White? After the end of season four...
Well, Walt's a shitload more likable.
Right?
Even as bad as he is.
That's the tough problem.
So we've got a drug dealer... murderer.
Well, let's not spoil that season four reveal.
Potential murderer.
No. We know we've murdered people, but I don't want to spoil
I'm not going to that.
Okay.
Oh, I see what you're going with that.
Yes. That is pretty heinous, right? But yet we still like Walter White.
Okay, so...
Pete has not done anything of that
thing.
Caliber.
Here's the thing. You put Pete in Walt's shoes,
uh-huh.
We would have gotten to season four in the first six episodes.
That's true. That's totally true.
So,
yeah.
I think I will go with Walt. Walt's the less despicable character.
Okay. Yeah, I'm with you there.
Just because the potentiality of Pete is so horrifying.
Yes.
I mean, Walt, say what you will about Walt, never raped a person.
That's true. Yeah. And he's never prostituted anyone
that we know of.
Maybe his kid.
No, Walt Jr. Get the fuck. No. Skip. Next question.
All right. Then that's it. That's all
there
is.
You had two questions.
No, I said I had one question.
Oh.
The next episode is going to be called Commissions and Fees.
Ooh.
Sounds interesting. Lane style.
Yeah.
That's it, though. Why don't we do some listener feedback?
All right. We had a ho-jillion listeners, a Howard Johnson million listeners. write in to tell me that it was a Winona Ryder and Edward Scissorhands I was trying to think of.
Yeah.
I will give credit to friend of the show, Rachel McKinney.
Awesome.
Lola wrote in, said, I'm now listening to the podcast, or listening to your Mad Men podcast. You said, this is the correction segment. I used to call it old show.
Oh,
I'm just going to call it corrections.
Yeah.
You said Dom must have told Pete about his past identity because of the aerospace, blah, blah. No, Pete opened the shoebox when Adam, Don's half-brother, said it in the office.
It's true.
So, another listener set me straight. Wendy Wheeler says, your grasp of U.S. history is embarrassingly weak.
It is.
One of you said there was that episode about the Kennedy assassination, and then in that same episode, I think Martin Luther King was assassinated, and the other one said possibly, yeah. Well, you know what, Wendy? Your grasp of Bald Move host is embarrassingly weak.
Because we are
I'm not the
weak.
One, and he is not the other. So, there. She says JFK is assassinated.
Get out of here. She's right.
Yeah!
My grasp of history is terrible.
Okay.
Anything that happened before 1997, I don't know about.
The thing is, I didn't think that was right, but I thought that someone else got assassinated in the same episode, because later, I thought there was a reaction...
Don't display your ignorance further.
Where Pete was like, how could that, you know... He was reacting to a second, but I don't know if I got confused with that in the movie JFK.
Maybe.
Because
Kevin Costner can do a lot to mess up your brain.
Plus, that movie's a work of fiction anyway.
Nah.
I thought it was factual. I'm not going to... Anyway.
All right.
So, you're right. I'm a giant dumbass, Wendy. And so is my co-host when it comes to U.S. history.
Yep.
And Mad Men history.
Yeah.
Shep writes in, Aaron, your Pete-colored roses mix-up was tremendous. I guess you're a big fan of baseball's all-time hit leader.
Pete Rose?
Or do you just admire degenerate gamblers? The most disturbing question is, why was he on your mind? When is Charlie Hustle not on my mind?
The Pete Rose porn is surprising.
Oh, yeah.
Aaron loves it.
Plus, he offered me a mint condition rookie card autographed for one night with him.
Worth $50 million.
If it was worth $50 million, he would have had me. But that haircut is a lot to overlook.
Ooh, yeah, it is.
It's like...
I
imagine his hair looks like what I think Donald Trump's hair looked like as a young boy.
Ugh, Disgusting.
Anyway, on the new stuff, we're out of the correction segment. We talked about a little bit about Tripel's comment on Roger about knowing Jones a hoe. But she also said the new sign needs to read Holloway, Sterling, Cooper, Draper, Price. There's a new sheriff in town, and she's a D-cup.
Mm-hmm.
She's actually Harris now, I believe. But Holloway is definitely her kind of more of her canonical name.
Yeah.
They play Megan Edition 4. Okay, so the play to Megan Edition 4 is about a woman who marries an emotionally stunted man on a whim and then gets shot by a sniper, just saying.
What is that? What are you talking about?
The
play to Megan Edition 4.
Yeah.
Oh, the play that Megan auditioned for.
Right.
Okay, gotcha.
It was what was it? It's called Little Murders, and she prompted me to read up on this because did they say that that's what it was? How do we know that it was Little Murders?
I don't remember.
Let's pretend like we know. Knowingly.
No, let's not. We've already gone over this history thing.
But yeah, I read into this, and it's about this girl who sees this man getting beat up by this guy. He lets muggers beat him up for his money until they get tired and just leave.
Prostitute.
Yeah. Well, anyway, she tries to teach him into like standing up for himself and be more assertive.
Uh-huh.
And as she's doing this, she gets shot by a sniper and blows her brains all out over him.
Jesus.
He decides to go then get a gun and I think go to her father's house. And they then take turns in her apartment shooting people on the street with a rifle. That's the play.
What sense does that make?
Well, it fits a lot in with the murderous rifle rampage theme going on here.
Sure, sure. But where is the leap of logic from my daughter got murdered to I'm going to go murdering random people?
Well, it's supposed to be like a dark, I guess a black comedy.
Okay.
So there's like absurdist stuff and, you know, disturbing things.
It's like
things.
Fargo.
Right.
Gotcha.
Was that a black comedy?
Oh, yeah, it was.
A comedy?
Fargo?
It's black, and
hell,
it had funny things
yeah,
in it.
Comedy.
Oh, no, I don't.
Oh, it's total comedy.
Moving
all right,
on.
Like Cable Guy. How about that?
Okay, fine. Jack Wintrode says, last shot, the elevator is now a portal. I like how when the door opened, Peggy was illuminated like it was from the briefcase in Pulp Fiction. Did you notice that?
Walking into her new life, yeah.
Yep, she stepped into the light. Noel, Captain Albano said, I love how the elevator was Don's hell, but Peggy's salvation. It was as though Peggy, the Madonna of the agency who redeemed Don with her blessed hand, left to work in heaven so Joan, with her triumphant gaze out the door, could reign as the whore among those in hell.
Well, also with...
Nice!
That's very good.
Tasty.
Also, Don is trapped in hell. There's no way out for him. He can't get in the elevator.
Because Peggy it's just, never there!
Because it's not there, yeah.
Mm.
And Peggy just walks right in because the elevator is there for her.
You know, it'd be a hell of a fan edit if we cut to her, like, walking
seeing the elevator shaft.
No, she just walks in, like, without looking, and then we, like, cut in a bunch of screams, and then we pan to the elevator shaft.
Yeah.
Moving on. Sandy William Anderson says, she wondered, I think we already talked about this, she's the one who wondered if Don had gotten there before she did the deed, would she have gone through with it?
Mm. Yeah.
I think we kind of discussed that adequately. Mm-hmm. D. Chandler says, wow, Mad Men runs rampant with casual misogyny at the best of times, but this was something else. I felt bad for Ken more than anyone else in the episode. Twice he showed he's really the only decent guy there, wanting to tell Herb. I want to say Herb.
Herb.
Wanting to tell Herb that Joan was married and being kind to Peggy when she was upset, and then Peggy yelled at him and later bailed and broke the pact.
Yeah,
we talked about that, too, because I was going to ask that in the feedback. Mm-hmm. We ended up discussing it. It seemed like there were, unsurprisingly, a lot of women upset with this episode in particular. And I think that's because, is that the one Rubicon that women still can't, like, charging money for sex is just, like, is not done?
Maybe. I don't know. Not a woman.
I don't know.
I have too much privilege to answer that question.
I was going
to
say,
yeah.
I might start talking bad about marriage again.
Oh, boy.
Anyway,
we have a lot of women listeners. They can tell us.
Yes, we do. I'd say by far this is the most lady-oriented cast
we do.
Which
is interesting, considering this is the most male-oriented show.
Well, I don't know.
In some ways. I mean,
they don't make it the men's side to be all that rosy either.
That is true. There are no pretenses.
Season one, season two, there was a lot of guys like wanting to dress up in 50s crap and be Don Draper.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's a lot of those guys that are now. Linda Schmidt said, Pete Campbell is the most despicable character ever, and I won't be happy until he's squashed like a bug on a windshield of a speeding Jaguar.
Yes.
Also, Dawn tries to keep Joan from prostituting herself while Pete asks her if she wants to be queen. Later, she touches Dawn's face in an almost motherly way. As a contrast, Dawn threw money in Peggy's face and later tries to keep her in the firm with more money. When she tells him there is no price, he kisses her hand like a queen. Big stuff from a son of a prostitute.
Wow, I like that.
She's also asking about whether we think Peggy is gone from the story. There's no fucking way.
Hell no.
All right. She gives a lot of evidence, but I just think...
I would argue that she's the only other lead in the show. Dawn and her are the leads.
Good point. So, no, I would say rest easy, Linda. She is not gone forever. Gil Wall says, I could see a big part of next season's arc being about Peggy going out there and finding things are no different everyone else. Yeah. Because they won't be. She won't have the kind of bond with anyone in any other agency like she has with Dawn. And who knows? Yeah, I don't think that Ted Chugga-gugga is going to be any more nurturing or, you know, I bet he's a rageaholic. We're going to find out he's like one of those guys that like throws shit and screams at people.
Maybe. A lot of people are predicting that Sal might be at that firm.
Mm.
Might get some more Sal next episode or next season.
That would be cool. That'd be a good way to put him in too.
Yeah, definitely.
Jamie Tickle says, I'll say one thing for Pete. He's the only one that treats Joan normally at all. Like a businesswoman. Everyone else is all mopey and awkward. I'm trying to think how I'd feel in that situation. And I appreciate anyone not treating my body as a national treasure. When Jaguar News comes in. Pete gives her direct and unawkward eye contact. Joan, shall we address the men? That's kind of the point I was trying to make earlier. Mm-hmm. Kimberly Ginsler says, I was talking about Kimmy Gibbler being creepy. She thought I was talking about her. Because
I slurred it.
Oh, yeah. I got a thing for the Gibbler.
Yeah.
I thought the title signified Joan and Peggy each making a choice that transformed them. Joan for the worse and Peggy, I hope, for the better. But they are both changed in something other than what they were before the decisions made in episode. While it's true that men and women are viewed differently for infidelity then and now, prostituting yourself or allowing your employer to pimp you out is a far cry from taking a mistress. What I do think is interesting is that back when something similar happened to Sal, Don couldn't understand why he had not slept with Lee Garner Jr. So clearly he views this type of situation very differently when it involves a woman. She speculates, is that because his mother was a prostitute? I think we both kind of had the same thought there.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. The question is not, I guess, whether or not you think Joan is a whore, but whether or not you think being a whore is a worse thing than being a cheater.
Well, first of all, we make some progress, but stop calling it whore and be a sex worker. Sex engineer.
There's nothing wrong with prostitute.
A sex technician.
Prostitute is a descriptive noun.
A sex-nition. Yeah, but it's like trash guy. You don't want to be, no one wants to be a trash guy. No one wants to be the guy that picks up your shit from the curb.
You want to be a trash technician?
You want to be a sanitation engineer.
An engineer.
That's right. That's what I'm saying. A sexual engineer. That classes sexual that profession engineer. Right up. Yep. Alex F. says, my case from last week, nobody's going to die, is even stronger now. I can't imagine that a show like Mad Men, which has always avoided going over the top, would have one major character quit the firm and kill another one off in the same season. That'd be too much, right? Unless it's the same character and she falls down an elevator shaft.
Hello!
Then we're talking synergy.
Yeah, we are.
Speaking of Peggy, here's my prediction. She's gone, but not for good. We won't see her again this season, nor the first half of next season. This is a bald prediction.
Mm-hmm.
But then she'll be brought back in a way that's not too contrived. Corporate merger? Or else, what if Lane's financial fuckery is worse than we thought? Yeah. An SCDP collapses completely. Don starts on his own with a few clients that he can salvage, probably with Ginsburg along for the ride, and convinces Peggy to join him after an embarrassing amount of begging. Or something better. The point is, I figure the wiener will keep her off screen for just a while to show us that he's serious. What's your take on that? Was she in the scenes from next week? I don't think she was.
No, I didn't see her.
Uh-oh. Boy, taking a whole episode off would be big news.
We saw Lane taking four episodes off.
But this is Peggy, not fucking Lane.
Right. She's lead.
All right. We'll see.
It would be big. It would be bold.
I am expressing mild amazement at that prediction. Emma says, a couple weeks ago, the Nerdist podcast did an interview with Jon Hamm. Did you hear that?
I didn't get a chance to listen
to it. Here's
the
thing. I listened to it, and I got bored halfway through and shut it off. Like, I kept waiting for them to talk about Mad Men.
Well, the Nerdist doesn't do that. Nerdist will talk about
Here's the problem with the Nerdist. The bigger I think their weakness of that show, which I think is pretty good, is that when they get a sufficiently big guy, they almost refuse to talk about the project to work in as almost a way of being too cool for school.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, John, you know, it's like, yeah, we got John Hamm on here and fuck Mad Men. We're just going to talk about some old bullshit. And
yeah, you got to know your audience. That's one thing we do on this show. We don't talk about anything but Mad Men. We don't talk about our lives. We don't talk about.
To be fair, we learned a lot about each other. How much money it would take for us to
that's true.
Give it up.
How much money it would take for you to be a bear.
Yeah. Somewhere between $3 and $50 million, I think.
Somewhere, yep.
But, yeah, anyway, I guess he did the whistle the mixture of the Mad Men theme song and the theme song for Harlem Globetrotters. So if you want to hear that, check out the Nerdist podcast.
John Hamm whistling, that's a riot.
Emma was seriously disappointed in this episode. The sexism and misogyny are all part of the time period, I know, but the writers do have control over what is going on. This is the George R.R. Martin. Like, sure, rape and violence is part of the Middle Ages, but do you have to make them a part of your story?
He does.
Smart people can disagree. To have the hot, sexy secretary literally sweep her way up the CDP hierarchy really upset me. I thought Joan had substantially evolved as a character, but now she's turned back into a semi-clever girl, but easy girl that she is portrayed as in the earlier seasons. I don't think I'd be as upset about this had she suggested the idea of being her partner, but she had that spoon-fed to her by Lane. I don't see the partners taking her seriously. Well, that actually is a good point, the fact that Lane had to be the one to give her the idea to make it worth it.
Yeah, I'm with her there. Like,
that would have been a little
maybe
stronger.
Maybe Joan suggesting that. Joan making the power play there would have been better. I do think that without Joan's kind of transformation over the last couple seasons to less of a just sex object around the office and more of a real character and real thinking person, I think it would have been the effect of this episode would have been lessened.
Shit, would have hurt. If we had done my season one Joan, we would have thought completely different. So
yeah.
I kind of think that's a little bit of a triumph that it's provoked this much discussion and...
Yeah. Well, that's what good shows do, is they take characters that you love, they make you hate them, then they make you love them again, and then they make you hate them again. It's playing with the audience.
Well, like I said, it's just like Sepinwall said. So I guess it's like what Sepinwall always said. Do you think Joan would do this if she's a real person? And I gotta say, I think that in these circumstances, in this point in her life, with what she saw as all the people that she respected and admired basically giving her the implicit okay, that she would have.
I think if they had put any less resistance into that character at this episode, I wouldn't have felt it was authentic.
But there again...
But they put just enough resistance into Joan that she knew this was wrong. She didn't want to do it, but she did.
All right. Tom G says, I've always liked the work Gary Basaraba has done.
What's that name again?
Basaraba. So he's the guy that played Herb.
All right. I've never seen him before.
He's every man defined. For every Kevin Costner, Brad Pitt, or George Clooney, there needs to be a Gary Basaraba.
Sure.
Imagine he answers casting calls for Guy Next Door, Partner Cop, or Dad. But his agent should put a permanent filter on castingcalls.com for creepy car executive, or just creepy, because he has it nailed. I feel like I got to take a shower.
He could pull off an Italian mobster, I think.
I bet he's been in Sopranos.
Oh, certainly.
For fuck's sake. Yeah. So, wise words from our poet laureate. Josh P. says, I believe that this will be the episode that defines the season for Mad Men. I said, that being said, I hated it. I honestly felt dirty after watching it.
Me too.
Don is the worst culprit. He is the first to say it's a bad idea, but then he is the first to leave the room. He didn't stand there and lecture to partners about what they were thinking about doing. He just left, nesting, pulling a Pontius Pilate and washing his hands of it. Pete may have done the dirty work, but everyone is to blame. No one stopped it, and no one really wanted to. Even Don's feeble attempt to stop Joan was a joke. It was a Joan joke.
That's my question here. Could Don have stopped it if he tried? I don't know, because
I don't
like
think
Pete
there's enough
said,
evidence to say either way.
There's 75% of the partners who didn't care enough to stop it.
Well, Joan could have stopped it. That's what.
Certainly,
that's the thing.
Yeah, I'm saying, could Don have stopped it if he wanted
to? I don't know, man. He could have probably.
He could have given stern lectures to everyone there, but in the end, they vote for
Bert's a question mark, but come on. Roger and Lane, he couldn't lean on them.
I think he could lean on Roger and get a 50-50 split vote.
But Lane is compromised. That's a good question.
Yeah. Lane needs something to happen here.
So that would be whether you believe he could talk, if Lane would rather have his $50,000 not get caught.
Yeah.
And I can, this is a good point here.
Did not try to stop
it. This is fortune telling that, Josh is doing here. I also totally see Pete and Joan having a Lane and Pete moment in a future partners meeting. Joan will say something and Pete will come back with, "You don't know what you're talking about. As far as I'm concerned, your usefulness to us ended the night you fucked that fat car guy from Brooklyn."
Is Pete going to box Joan? Is that what I'm hearing?
I would take Joan in that fight.
I would too.
I would bet heavy on the Joan.
After seeing the beating that Pete took at Lane's hands.
All right, we got the two fantastic emails here. Okay. Marcelina J. says, "Joan is compared to both Cleopatra and Helen of Troy. Both are powerful women who died tragic deaths, their destinies overshadowed by the fate of the men that they loved and in the end died for. The shadow of what Joan did will loom over her for the rest of her days, as all the partners know how she got her partnership. It's a piece of information that'll always be there, reminding everyone of what they have done and eventually tearing the partners and the company apart. Yeah. Maybe all those images of death will actually mean the death of SCDP. A few words about Ginsburg. Good guy. Good God, that guy's annoying. And I can't shake the feeling that he will be the next one leaving the company. Every man for himself, like Roger said. And Ginsburg seems to have Ginsburg seems to not see SCDP as family, but as a job he will throw away as soon as something better comes along. No feelings, no regrets. In my opinion, him telling Peggy about Roger's scheme for the Jewish wine brand a few episodes back was a clear indicator of this. What do you think?"
I really wish we could have... I really wish that I could have, like, a constant dialogue with our fans. You do on Facebook. I can't post on Facebook for...
You could.
Facebook reasons. Because I want to ask why he thinks that Ginsburg treats this as just a job.
Point of fact, this was actually an email that we both got. So you could
I could have responded. You're right. You're correct. I should do that. Because I view Ginsburg as not viewing this as a job, is viewing this more of a career. Like, he was happy to get this job. He was thrilled.
But did he think it was something different? Because he's like, "I'm dying to work with you." The guy who wrote that letter and... "You know, I've seen your work and the way you guys..." Well, do you think he's illusioned or disillusioned with Don right now?
He might be disillusioned because he's seen Don not at his best, certainly.
Yeah, so I think he wanted that family.
Yeah, but now maybe he switched to job mode.
There you go.
Yeah.
Anything else?
Nope.
Last one, Dan in New York. Peggy is taking a different path, the path of Helen of Troy. Courted by the Prince of Troy, she runs off with him and thereby starts the Trojan War. He's talking about Helen here. When Don throws money at Peggy, parroting the prostitution theme, he yells, "Peggy, you want to go to Paris? Go to Paris." Paris, in this case, is not only the city, but Paris is the name of the Prince of Troy, here manifested as Teddy Chaw. This could mean war will break out between SCDP and Chaw's firm in the future. Chaw's firm in the future. Jesus. Continuing talking about Peggy, he says she has no time for chivalry. Offers of assistance coming from the men around her. Right after Don yells at her, Cosgrove shakes his head and follows Peggy into her office. He tries to be the white knight rescuing the damsel in distress, but she rebuffs him. Before we move on, I thought that was a pretty good... We can debate about this next point, but this Trojan War, Helen of Troy...
Yeah, this is along
Paris,
the lines of Elizabeth Moss and her teacher or whatever.
That's, I feel like that's a theme that Dan picked up on. It was intentionally there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's too coincidental to not have all that in there. Peggy knows all the stories and, like a good admin, manipulates the public, rather. She twists the Lady Godiva story of a woman using nudity to get her way into a parable of female power. In Peggy's version, Lady Godiva rescues a man by scooping him up into her horse, all in order to switch the normal order of things and get women to buy cologne for men on Valentine's Day. What's the name of this cologne? Chevalier Blanc, yeah. Which means white knight in French.
Ba-dum-ba-dum. Oh, hey now.
The chivalry theme also made itself into freelancers, which was originally a term for unaffiliated knights seated around an oval table, comparing to the round table, all of whom rise when a woman enters the room, and also, more importantly, in the final scene between Don and Peggy. Don's long kiss of her hand, practically kneeling before her, is a classic move of a white knight who chastely loves his lady and offers his undying loyalty. This is as good as chivalry gets, and Peggy is moved. But she knows that chivalry offers no lasting solution to women. By exalting women, it sets them apart from the world, denying them real power. Peggy seeks to make it on her own merits, as an equal, not as a lady. This is what makes her the true other woman of the title, that is to say, a new kind of woman. Hot damn. I like that.
Not bad. Not bad.
Dan in New York, bravo.
Yes.
I apologize. I had to paraphrase, cut, and sometimes leave out a lot of stuff because we just didn't have time for it.
Yeah.
So I hope
we ran a little longer.
If I didn't get to you this week, I hope I get to you next week, and hope that I didn't at least miss any thoughts.
Yeah.
Even if I didn't get to read everybody's exact words, I hope I got the best of everything's thoughts in there. So, ready to initiate the outro sequence?
If you are.
Super quick, because I'm tired. if you want to keep up with what me and Jim are doing, go to baldmove.com. Listen to our various other podcasts. If you'd like to send us feedback about this one, you can do so at madmen@baldmove.com. You can follow me at Facebook, facebook.com/baldmove. Jim holds down Twitter, @baldmove. Lots of different ways to support us. Number one, tell a friend. Number two, leave us an iTunes review. We kind of had a drive last month or last week, and we almost got over 100. We're at like 98 and holding.
Oh.
So, again, thank you very much. That really helps us boost the traffic and reach more people, which is the reason we're doing this in the first place. Is, you know, the more, obviously, Dan from New York. And
yeah, we had a podcast before that got like 50 people. We quit that.
yeah, right?
That's why we're doing it, because you people listen. So.
Yeah, we have all you guys, and Tom G, and Shep, and D, and Linda, and Noel, and Triple L, and all these people that make our lives more interesting and our cast more informative. That's what we live for. So we're just trying to get more and more. You can help, you know, speaking of prostitution, if you're buying shit on Amazon anyway, consider using our amazon.baldmove.com link, or you can also get to the same place at the top of our baldmove.com site. There's a big yellow-orange banner.
Also consider that $50 million deal.
That's right.
That I was talking about.
That's a listen. You don't have to be a oil chic. You just have to have $50 million. So I can work that out. Anyway, anything you buy on that session, it doesn't cost you anything. It just goes and takes a little bit of profit from Amazon and gives it to us. And we've had some listeners really do some nice things. Like someone bought a whole Adobe suite.
Yeah.
We've had people buy laptops and Kindle Fires. And, you know, we just really appreciate that, the kind of big ticket stuff. If you're getting on Amazon, it just helps us pay for the bandwidth, keep the lights on here at the Bald Move headquarters, buy Canadian Club whiskey. It's all appreciated. And finally, we had this thing last week, a few weeks ago, we debuted Flatter. It's a little icon on our site where you can go and charge up a Flatter account and then direct it to donate us money. We've been resisting using PayPal because Jim and I both hate it. We've had some listeners want us to bring in PayPal donations. We will see. You know, again, I feel weird about just taking money from people. I like the Amazon route better.
Well, that's what you're doing with Flatter, but...
That's what I'm saying. I feel a little prostitute-y
about doing Flatter. Yeah,
feel a little Rice-a-roni.
Yeah.
So, but
the listeners requested it, man. It wasn't like we put it up.
Right. Right.
So, what are you gonna do?
I don't know. I'm a little drunk.
All right. Well, we should end the episode then.
Yeah. Next week, you said it was.
Next week is called Commissions and Fees. Only two more episodes left.
Yeah.
So.
And then we have like a month off, and then Breaking Bad comes roaring back for season 5.
Can I say, I am so excited about Breaking Bad. If you have not seen the first 4 seasons of Breaking Bad, go watch them.
Yeah.
In the month lead up.
You've got it's possible. We know we can do this because we plowed through almost 2 seasons Justified in like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So you for damn sure can plow through 4, especially since that first season's a pussy season. It's like 6
7
episodes.
It's nothing. Go do it. It's a fantastic show. It's my favorite show. Just from the watchability standpoint alone.
I like Mad Men. Mad Men's A1 for me. Breaking Bad's...
it's phenomenal, but watchability, A2. Man, I just love watching Walt do his thing. I love it.
I can't wait for it to come back.
But our listeners should love it, too. If you haven't seen it, go watch it.
It's coming
us.
In July, I believe. It's July 17th.
And we do podcasts about it, so... But that's it. Until next week, I'm Jim.
And I'm Aaron. See you guys then.
Mm-hmm.